eyes will be on the meeting between Presidents Cyril Ramaphosa and Donald Trump in Washington on Wednesday. We speak to U.S. intelligence analyst, retired Colonel Chris Wyatt. Welcome, Colonel.
Chris, thanks a lot. Wow, it's kind of weird. I'm back here in the land of round doorknobs once again, the U.S., after my month plus in South Africa. And bit of an adjustment, even for an American. You know, of course, we're 6 hours behind, so I'm awake at 3 o'clock in the morning because it's 9 o'clock, but things are going well. So thank you for having me on. I'm happy to talk about this upcoming visit, which I have termed the single most important meeting in the political life of Cyril Ramaphosa. I think it's more significant than his role in CODESA, more significant than his role when he won the party presidency in December of 2017 at the ANC Congress. I think this could make or break South Africa, depending on what happens on Wednesday.
Now, four cabinet ministers will join President Ramaphosa for his meeting in the White House. What do you think of the composition of his delegation?
Well, I've seen two of the ministers, and I've just been back for a few hours. I got back yesterday and then went right away into a production of videos and got a little bit of sleep. I've seen that Minister of Agriculture John Steenhuisen will be coming along with Durko's minister, that's Ronnie Lamola, neither of whom are all that credible in the United States' eyes, in my view. I think both of those are bad decisions that are going to backfire. We'll see how it goes. John Steenhuisen can be very personable. I don't think Ronnie Lamola is very personable, but I don't think that the U.S. government is going to be hoodwinked by anything either one of those people say, particularly the way that Minister of Agriculture John Steenhuisen has recently rubbished the experience of those who came to the U.S. as refugees. I think Donald Trump is going to take that personally, because the reason these people are in America is because of Donald Trump. And when John Steenhuisen says basically these people made a mistake, Trump's not going to look favorably on that. So I don't know. Who are the other two that are in the party, the other ministers?
It's Tao. And then we've got the minister in the presidency as well.
Well, Parks Tao, probably not a bad idea. That's a person who is for trade, and that's who you want to get there. But Kumbudzo Ntshavheni, I'm not so sure that's a good decision either. You want to send a minister who failed in every previous portfolio. I really don't think that that's the A team. Ramaphosa is taking his B team at best, possibly even a few C or D team members to it. And if that hurts the feelings of these ministers, well, good. Start doing your jobs, and then you won't be rubbish that way.
Well, you have been in touch with refugees in America, or they have been getting in touch with you, Colonel. What are they telling you?
Well, number one, a couple of refugees who've been interviewed by the press are very disappointed in the way they're being portrayed, as am I. One of the gentlemen, a BBC reporter, went and made this big deal, gave up a plush five-bedroom house, now living in a two-star hotel. I'm sorry, what exactly did you expect them to be living in the moment they arrived? A palatial mansion in Monterey, California? Of course not. Stop being silly and stupid. It's also, these are efforts by the media. They're trying to portray them in negative light. They're getting harassed by media, you know, and my advice to them, those who contact me, is that simply don't answer the messages. You know, if you don't answer the messages, it can't confirm it's you. They'll go away. Once the next cohort of refugees arrives in America, the focus will shift from you to others, and they should stay off social media for the most part. But a lot of them are being treated very unfairly. Also, you have a number of South African individuals who are breaking the POPI Act, breaking international norms, and violating U.S. federal law. And if you think you're beyond the reach of the U.S. government because you're in South Africa, go ahead and commit your crimes. And when you travel abroad, we have extradition treaties with most countries in the world. There'll be a warrant for your arrest for violating the rights of these people. Every refugee who arrives in America, whether they're from Sudan, from Chad, from Somalia, from South Africa, is protected by the U.S. Constitution, 750,000 law enforcement officers, and 1.4 million military. So you're messing with something you don't know what you're messing with. That's my advice to those people who are trying to dox these people and damage and harm their lives. They're gone. Stop having envy. Move on. So bad. Too sad for you. That's my message to them.
There have been more claims, however, that some of the refugees allegedly misused this refugee, so-called refugee program, or used it opportunistically, Chris.
I've seen those reports. And what I have to say about that is that's none of their darn business. None of their business. Do they work for the U.S. government? Do they respond to the U.S. government? No. So why do they care about it? Doesn't matter whether someone's used it opportunistically or misused it, because that's a problem for the U.S. government. They're the ones who vet these people, not you, Chris, not me, not these people are complaining about it. And what is their problem? What are they so upset about? I've seen attacks on one of my interviewees who will be back on the program at some point. And that person was being attacked, being falsely claimed of not owning a farm. And, you know, people go and try to dox people. People do realize that farms are registered in other people's names. They're often in trust. So it's, look, they're going after things that make no sense. It's not about farmers. It never has been about farmers. It's not about Afrikaners exclusively. As we've seen, the program is open to ethnic minorities. Indians and coloreds and others can apply to the program and potentially come to America. So I'm very frustrated by this focus on where they lie. That's not my problem. That's not your problem. That's not the problem these people were squawking. And notice where most of the squawking is coming from, Chris. It's not coming from disadvantaged Black South Africans or coloreds or Indians. It's not coming from poor white South Africans or middle class. It's coming from the elite, the privileged, who live in their gated communities, who live behind guards and security barriers. They're the ones claiming. And I've also had a couple people contact me who've lied about refugees, and I can demonstrably prove that the information they gave me was a lie. I'm not defending them. And if they lied, that's not my problem. That's a problem for my government, and they'll sort that out. If they've committed crimes, then they'll be prosecuted on this end. But I have no indication that any of these people misled. As far as being opportunistic, well, good for them. Good for them. When you're denied opportunity to get a government contract because of BE, when you're denied a bursa because you can't, or bursary because you can't go to university because you're the wrong skin color or the wrong ethnicity, and you're going to take advantage of the fact that we are a free country, we allow you to do what you want to do here that's legal. If they took an opportunity, good on them. And if there's a colored or Indian South African who feels oppressed and wants to take advantage of the program, good on them. But let me be clear about something very quickly, Chris, before I wrap up with that comment. I'm not encouraging anybody to leave South Africa, and I never have. You know that. I've never said anyone should leave South Africa, and it breaks my heart that anyone would want to leave such an amazing country. But it's not an amazing country for all 63 million South Africans. It's an amazing country for a few million South Africans. And the rest live in squalor. They live in misery. They live in fear of their lives. They live in fear because of their skin color or because of their circumstances. And no one should be subjected to that. And so that's my position on that one, Chris.
I wonder, what role do you think Elon Musk not being able to bring Starlink to South Africa has played in America's attitude towards South Africa?
Well, that's a good question. And I'm going to rubbish the concern that anyone lays out there. First off, this issue didn't start with Elon Musk. It didn't start with Starlink. And Starlink can go to South Africa. Just Elon Musk has refused to apply for a license. Starlink has never asked for a license because ICASA said he has to give 30% of the equity to someone who's Black. And rightly so, he's not an idiot. And he says, I'm not going to do that. They've invested nothing. They have no skin in the game, no equity. They're bringing no talent. Why should I give away my equity? Hard earned. So the Starlink has absolutely nothing to do with this. Nothing. In February of 2024, as I repeated several times and reported several times, a bipartisan group of members of the House of Representatives introduced legislation, a resolution, to reassess the relationship with South Africa with the objective of potentially placing sanctions on leaders in the government and senior members of the ANC for their actions against minorities in South Africa. This came up last year before Trump was even president, before he got elected. It has nothing to do with Elon Musk. It has nothing to do with Starlink. This is nonsense, this story people perpetuating. The list of grievances the U.S. government has against South Africa's conduct against ourselves and against our friends, partners, allies is legion, including training Chinese communist fighter pilots at a training academy in South Africa with U.S. and NATO pilots doing the training. That's an egregious offense. The lies and subterfuge about the Lady R situation. There's a whole list of things going on here that have irritated the United States for a long time, and it came to a head. Elon Musk has nothing to do with this. There are other South Africans who are more influential, in my view, than Elon Musk influencing Donald Trump regarding South Africa, people he's known for decades, and you can probably figure out who those are on your own. But my point here is that Starlink has nothing to do with this. And anybody that runs a story that says that really doesn't understand what's going on here. The United States is pissed off at the ANC in South Africa, and it has been pissed off for several years. But because we had an incompetent president who didn't know what day it was, let alone which pardons he was signing, we didn't press forward with this. But members of Congress tried. Had the Republicans controlled the House and the Senate last year, that bill would have gone to Biden and he would not have signed it, would have died. But it disappeared. It's back now, and we'll see if it goes forward. I don't think it's going to get any traction right now because the actions President Trump is taking are much more demonstrative towards South Africa. And this meeting on Wednesday, it's for all the marbles, Chris. It really is. If this goes badly, South Africans will face in 6 weeks a 31% tariff on all their exports. 4% of your gross domestic product is tied up in trade with the U.S., and it will be disappearing overnight, virtually, if this isn't fixed. The ANC and the government national unity has squandered 6 weeks of opportunity to negotiate with the Trump administration. They've set nobody here, they've talked to nobody here, and they're now at the back of the queue. Ramaphosa has a chance to fix this on Wednesday, but I don't think he's going to.
At this stage, what are the chances of personal sanctions against African National Congress members, Chris?
Well, that's a place where Elon Musk may play a role, in fact, and some of these other influential South Africans. And I don't want to say I fear, but I certainly am growing more concerned that that's coming in the pipeline. There are a lot of very prominent voices in South Africa and in the U.S. who are calling for sanctions against leaders of the ANC and leaders in the government national unity. So I think it's a possibility. It's not going to happen, obviously, before this meeting on Wednesday, and I don't know the happening immediate aftermath of it. But I'll tell you what, Cyril Ramaphosa had better have a very good plan. If he thinks offering rare earth elements in the Karoo or natural gas rights off the coast of South Africa are going to mollify Trump and the anger. See, that's the mistake people are making. It's just Trump. It's not just Trump, Chris. Congress is angry. They are hot fog, to use a South African Afrikaans word. They have had enough of the arrogance in the cheek from their perspective. I'm not saying like that's not my analysis. I'm saying from their perspective, the arrogance in the cheek of the government of South Africa flaunting, refusing to vote with the international community against Russia when it invaded, doing other things, going to Tehran and flouting that in the face of the United States, doing open trade negotiations and commercial, military, and nuclear facilities with Iran, which is a great threat to global security, not just America. The United States has had their fill of what's happening with international relations vis-a-vis South Africa's government. And if this isn't, if they don't have a solid plan beyond offering minerals and offering natural gas, then there's going to be a real problem here. The government is going to have to offer some sort of concessions. And for once, those who complained about the U.S. intruding into the sovereignty of South Africa will have a fair point. Because at this point, the U.S. has made no demands. Trump has not demanded that the 140-plus racist laws be rescinded. He's not demanded the ANC take any action. He's not demanded they withdraw the case against the ICJ. But at this meeting, some of that will likely be on the table. And for the first time ever, those who are opponents or those who decry what's happening will actually have a valid point saying, hey, the U.S. is interfering in South African politics. But you know what? That's because South Africa has been interfering in the national interests of the United States for decades, and we've looked the other way. Washington isn't looking the other way, Chris, and people avoid this reality at their own peril. Again, I have people, you know, I say what's likely to happen. People say I'm threatening South Africa. I'm not threatening South Africa. I don't want South Africa to suffer. I don't want to see 141,000 automotive jobs disappear because you can't ship 25,000 cars to America anymore because 31% tariffs is prohibitively expensive. I don't want to see that. But it's a real possibility. And the fact that I mentioned, analyze it, doesn't make it a threat. It just makes it the honest truth. And people need to start paying attention and stop living in their bubble in the National Executive Committee of the ANC, thinking you can send four white Afrikaners, pick one of them to be your ambassador. Trump doesn't care whether your ambassador is white, black, brown, blue, green, or purple. He cares about a competent person who speaks for the president authoritatively. And that's the mistake these people are making in South Africa. They have no understanding of what they're dealing with U.S. politics. And there are people in South Africa that do understand U.S. politics, but they seem to have zero influence. I would hope they would exert more influence on the government.
Chris, you have just spent weeks in South Africa, touring the country from one end to the other end. What are your biggest takeaways?
Well, my biggest takeaway, number one and number two. The first takeaway is that, as always, the most exciting part of visiting South Africa is the people. The people are amazing. I don't care if they're Venda, they're Xhosa, they're Zulu, they're Khoi, they're San, they're Afrikaner, they're Portuguese. It doesn't matter. South Africa's people are fascinating, you know, and I love some of the phrases, if I'm honest. As if you'd be anything but honest. Why would you be anything but honest? But I absolutely love the interaction and experience I had with South Africans. That's number one. And the second big takeaway I've taken from this is that there's a lot of tension. There's rising tensions, and it's being stoked by politicians and by social media. And it's having a very harmful effect on all South Africans. A lot of South Africans, particularly white minority South Africans, are living in fear that they shouldn't be living in because of the actions of people in politics and social media. And that's very disheartening. But it's not just white South Africans. At my meet and greets that I do around the country, I set a personal best this time with 18 of them in six provinces. Exhausting, I should say. In fact, the largest was over 300 at Opiplas in Pretoria. And it was just unbelievable. Many news crews were there, CBS, Newsroom Africa, Reuters, Dutch film crew. Not to talk to me. They wanted to peg my attendees, asking them if they were going to go to America. I think that's why they're there. But at these meetings, it's normally I have a much more diverse ethnic crowd than I had, but these meetings were overwhelmingly Afrikaners for two reasons. Number one, people interested in the refugee program, so they're going to come for that rather than come to my normal meet greets to say hello and just chat. And then the second is that a lot of my black and colored and Indian South African followers are scared. They're afraid of going to a meeting like this and being identified as talking to someone who's talking about politics in South Africa openly. That wasn't the case in the past. My previous visits, I've done five trips in the past 2.5 years. And everyone, I've had black South Africans, I've had Indian South Africans, I've had colored South Africans come. And while there were some of those folks, the percentage of them appearing at my meetings this time is demonstrably lower. Number one, because refugee, a lot of people think it's only for Afrikaners. It wasn't. I've said that all along. And number two, because people are living in fear. They don't want to be called a coconut or have their jobs put at risk by people who are threatening their lives. And that's the other takeaway, is people are scared and it's unnecessary. These people who are stoking racial hatred and fear in all South Africans, black, white, and brown, need to stop. You're horrible human beings, and you're a disgrace to the race of human beings. Stop it now. I've had enough of it, and so have my viewers.
Thank you. That was United States intelligence analyst, retired Colonel Chris Wyatt, speaking to Biz News ahead of the meeting this week between Presidents Donald Trump and Cyril Ramaphosa. Thank you, Colonel. We'll chat again as soon as they've had that meeting. And I'm Christine.
Thanks a lot, Chris. We appreciate it. And fingers crossed, as we say, fingers are crossed, hoping it goes well on Wednesday for South Africa.